Well, this is definitely the time to start thinking about it because obviously light levels naturally are much lower in winter. So, you know, the sun angle changes and light volume changes. So you may notice that the ambient natural light you have in your home in winter is much lower than it is as we get into spring and summer. And so that can be a big shift for your plants. And so if you notice that your plants start to, you know, get a little peaked or start to lose leaves or just, you know, you struggle with sort of your watering regimen, it's probably because light levels have just dropped too much in the winter. So adding a few hours of supplemental light from grow lamps in the winter is a great way to keep your plants happy. Or, you know, if you're bringing in plants from the patio or balcony to overwinter, yeah, you're probably going to need more light. So some supplemental light from grow lamps is a great way to keep plants happy in the winter, because you know what stressed plants do, they tend to develop things like pest problems and all sorts of issues. So supplementing light is not only important to getting them through the winter, but also to suppressing a lot of things like pest and disease issues.
Doom, do, 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 do. Hello, plant friends. Welcome to episode 74 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. How you doing? I hope your weeks have been wonderfully planty as per usual. Still in DC, enjoying all of the planty things and just wonderful things that DC has to offer. Special thank you to, I have a whole bunch of new plant friends on Patreon. Thank you, Hannah Sanders, Claire Spaulding, and Meredith DeWald. You are all new plant friends supporting Bloom and Grow Radio on Patreon. If anyone is interested in supporting Bloom and Grow, you can click the link in the show notes. It's patreon.com/bloomandgrowradio. You guys are supporting the editor for the show, which is the only way that I can keep pumping these episodes out to you while I am touring with Cats the Musical. So I am so thankful to all of you. And once we hit 100 Patreon supporters, I am going to evaluate and survey you guys to figure out what the upper levels of tiers you might want and what else I can start making for you guys, because it's all about you. So thank you, plant friends. Speaking of plant friends, I'm so excited to have Leslie Halleck back on the show. She is just my botanical gal pal. I love her so much. I'm so thankful that she is so generous with her time coming back on the show today to talk grow lights. So you'll know Leslie, she did the two-part episode on understanding natural light, which was hugely successful and hugely helpful for the Bloom and Grow Radio community. You might have also heard her on our Propagation 101, but Leslie has a book on grow lights. And if you guys have been OG listeners, you'll remember that episode 12 of Bloom and Grow Radio was also on grow lights with my other favorite botanical bro, Chris Satch. I recommend you listen to that episode too. I just think now that we are getting into the 70s, 80s, 90s episodes, it's important to take these really important issues and important topics and have them in several different voices, because we are all going to process information in different ways from different people. And Chris's episode is unbelievable. You should totally go listen to that one. And this episode is unbelievable. And they both explain the science of grow lights differently and beautifully. And I'm thankful for both of these episodes. But Leslie is so awesome. And her book, Gardening Under Lights, is so helpful. It's got charts galore. I love all of her charts in that book. So Leslie joins me today to, you guessed it, talk about everything we need to know for grow lights. So plant friends, winter is coming. Winter is here. Fall is here. And obviously that means lower light. So many of us are probably considering getting grow lights for that. But also for me, the reason why I needed grow lights was because I accumulated a lot of plants really quickly without really thinking about light. And then I realized that I didn't have enough light and I had to kind of backtrack. So for me, getting grow lights was having plants, realizing that I didn't have the environment to have them thrive, and then bringing grow lights in to, number one, elevate the way my space looks, because the grow lights that I have in my apartment are some of the nicer things I own and are so beautiful. I did really fun DIY projects. I put a grow light in a bookshelf and I have an entire bookshelf filled with plants. I illuminated dark corners with my grow lights. So it was a really fun way for me to nest and create more light so I could let my plant collection grow. I mean, I got my second Soltech Solutions grow light literally because Billy brought me a Fiddly Fig Figaro, our Fiddly Fig cutting. he brought it home for me. He was so excited about it. And I realized that, you know, from my episode on Fiddly Fig with Erin from Lee Kyoko, I knew that I needed bright light for this baby, and all of my bright light areas were already taken by my plants. So I knew that I had to go buy another Soltech light to illuminate another corner. And that also allowed me to put a whole bunch of other plants in that corner. So that's my Fiddly Fig Monstera corner with one Soltech light. And then my other Soltech light has all of my citrus, lemony and limey, and some other highlight plants. So the collection just keeps on growing. If you are interested in more information on the lights that I have in my apartment, and I have such great relationships with the companies, I have really awesome discount codes for you guys. I'm going to do kind of a grow light review at the end of this episode and tell you some coupon codes for them. And also I've compiled a bunch of plant friends and Leslie's suggestions for the grow lights that she uses and likes, and the timer that she mentions in this episode. So all of that is going to be reviewed at the end of today's episode. So make sure you stay tuned. But I think it is time to bring this very brainy planty lady to your earbuds. This was such an awesome conversation. I'm so thankful to Leslie. Her books, Gardening Under Lights and Plant Parenting, are also linked in the show notes. They're awesome. I refer to them a lot because she's so smart and such a good writer. So before I bring you this conversation with this plant lady that I love, I want to talk to you about one of today's sponsors that I love, A Floating Bed and Breakfast. Plant friends, it's almost too good to be true, but in Norfolk, Virginia, there are houseboats that are filled with houseplants that you can rent on Airbnb. It is such a clever, fun Airbnb listing that a listener, Nicole, has created. So, A Floating Bed and Breakfast has two houseboats that are on a shared private dock. The original one is the Lois Elaine. It hosts two people. It is so planty, so adorable. It's perfect for a couple's getaway or just a way to disconnect. And the Stanley Lee, which is their second larger boat, has two bedrooms. It sleeps up to six, and it is the perfect boat for a family or a group of friends. Or you can do what me and my friends did and rent the whole dock out with both boats and just have a planty, awesome party. They're also very affordable. When we stayed, we just had the best time. We disconnected our phones. We enjoyed the amazing outdoor space. Both boats have amazing outdoor space that with really comfy chairs and lots of plants. We drank till the sun went down over the marina. We played music all evening. And then I woke up and watched the sun rise over the water and had a beautiful meditation and some quiet stillness, which was just pure magic, plant friends. So rent these boats for date nights, for overnights, girls' weekends, photo shoots, or just an opportunity to disconnect, like I mentioned. If you are in the Norfolk area and you are interested in coming aboard, Nicole is offering 20% off by writing her directly and saying that Maria sent you. So check out theloiselanehouseboat.com and tell her Maria sent you for 20% off. And as an added bonus, I left a house plant with a Bloom and Grow Radio sticker on the pot on each boat. So the first person to send me a photo of the house plant, the Bloom and Grow Radio house plant, will get a free Bloom and Grow Radio mug in the mail. So once again, visit theloiselanehouseboat.com and write Nicole for 20% off your stay. All right, plant friends, here's Leslie. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. Welcome back to Bloom and Grow Radio, Leslie.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. I have the very best time talking about plants with you.
Yay. Is this your third time repeat? I think. Wait, well, you did two episodes for understanding natural light with us. And did we have you on for one more as well?
Yes, we did propagation.
Oh, of course, we did propagation.
Right. I know. It's hard. We talk so much that it's hard to remember which conversations are podcasts and which ones are just general plant conversations.
IRL. Yeah, because we've now been able to meet in real life at Cultivate last month. And I'm so comfortable with the idea of you being a repeat visitor for Bloom and Grow Radio. I'm really into it.
Well, thank you. I really have the best time doing it. So I appreciate you having me back on.
Yay. So I'm really excited because we had you on for that unbelievable two-part episode on understanding natural light. And for those of you listening, it was last season. It was a two-part episode. You must go back and listen because Leslie dropped so many knowledge bombs on us. But I thought the funny part about that book was you have a book about actually grow lights and not natural light. So I was like, well, we have to have you back for another Grow Light 101 episode because winter is coming. We are hopefully, if it ever becomes cool again, it's so hot right now.
Well, and I live in Texas. So if you want to talk about hot, we can talk about that. But really, you know, summer is an indoor gardening season for us. We really have a 12-month gardening season here. But, you know, when things are extreme, you go indoors. So yeah, it's funny. My book that came out in 2018 is Gardening Under Lights, The Complete Guide for Indoor Growers. And it was that book that sort of, I guess, led us to initially talking to one another. But for your audience, we both felt like rather than talk about all of the kind of artificial environment and lighting that I cover in Gardening Under Lights, we really needed to take a step back and do some 101 understanding about natural light, because that's really, I think, the pain point for most new indoor plant keepers is that, you know, you can't really dive into understanding artificial light and supplemental lighting if you don't understand the basics of natural light. And understanding how to use natural light is really the first step in being successful. So I was more than happy to talk about natural light with you in those episodes, because I think that was the best way to help people just getting started.
100%. Because I feel like I say the two big culprits of plant killers is light and watering, but watering actually has so much to do with understanding your light and how that plant is going to photosynthesize. So I feel like light definitely is primary there. So like I'm always saying with, I feel like all of these guests on the show, to be a good plant parent, it's so important to take a step back and understand how these plants function in the natural world before we try and replicate their indoor environment with some sort of care card from a nursery. So
right. You have to understand some of the science. I think if you're interested in plants, learning a little bit of botany 101 is going to help you be much more successful. There are lots, like you said, you know, tip cards, tips and tricks out there, right? But the approach that I prefer to take is a fundamental foundation of understanding the science first, but translating it in a way that's going to be digestible and usable for any hobbyist, no matter their level of experience. I mean, we all don't get to be professional botanists and horticulturists, right? So I feel like I'm really lucky that I got to do that. And so my whole world is immersed in that. But for those of us that are just hobbyists, it can be really confounding when we're not having the success we want, until you realize you really do have to kind of go back to seventh grade science class and do a little botany 101. And it can really open up the world of understanding for you as to why you might be struggling with certain plants.
Absolutely. And oh my gosh, as you were just talking, that just reminded me the tips and tricks. We had an offline conversation maybe a month ago when there was video circulating called Plant Hacks. It was like circulating on Facebook and it was like pour soap all over your plant. Like take a soda bottle and like stick succulent leaves in it and roots will grow. It was like all these crazy hacks. And I sent it to you and six people sent it to me because they're like, oh, Maria likes plants. I bet she knows all these hacks. Right. And I sent it to you and I was like, Leslie, what is going on?
And you got my classic professional horticulturist like sigh of dismay.
Yes.
You know, not that there aren't some fundamental truths in some of those hacks.
Yes, some of them circulated. Of the 14.
Right. Totally. That gets circulated in pieces and parts. But the problem I have with all those hack videos and hack posts is that they present things in a way that is unrealistic for most inexperienced first-time plant keepers, gardeners, to sort of get you to think that this is all just really easy. And if you just do this thing you see in the picture or this video, it's going to work for you. And that is generally not the case. And it can be very disappointing and I think misleading. So I prefer to stick with science versus hacks and sort of tips and tricks. That's what I feel like is more successful for people.
So this episode is going to demystify, you know, I feel like a hack could be getting a grow light. If you have a low light environment, if you have a low light corner, put a grow light in it and everything will be okay. But this episode is going to demystify kind of what the grow light is actually doing and giving us an understanding there. So before we dive into photosynthesis 101, I know that you are the grow light queen in your house in Texas. So what's your personal grow light setup?
Oh gosh, right? So my personal grow light setup is everything. I have pretty much one or two of everything. I have a very dark house, sadly. I love the layout of my house, which is why I bought it. But unfortunately, I have very little natural light. I only have a few windows that get what are, you know, kind of baseline acceptable levels for plant keeping. So I have to supplement light to any of the plants that I keep near windows. And I have to provide complete artificial lighting for plants in many other places in my house. So, and my garage is totally kind of pimped out as what I call my plant lab, my garage garden. So we'll start in the garage. So if you really want to talk about totally artificial spaces where there's no natural light, I have multiple grow tents that I have in my garage garden, and those are equipped at any different time with high intensity discharge lighting like CMH or HPS lamps. I have a couple of different types of high intensity discharge grow lamps, and that's where I grow produce. That's where I grow fruit and food producing plants that need a lot of volume of light. I have some spaces in my garage where I also have some large ballasts for LED bars or T5 fluorescents where I overwinter a lot of plants or maybe grow some herbs. And then I have racks where I grow seedlings out there. I mean, I've got it out in the garage. When you move into my house, it depends on where it is. If it's in a living space, I'm going to be using more attractive type LEDs in spaces where I live because I don't want to hang big, ugly, high-intensity discharge grow lamps in my living room. And then I have some nice fixtures, like the fixture from Garden Supply Company that's got some nice LED bars in it that looks like a piece of furniture. So I have that in my living space. I have some of the great Soltec LED spotlights in my living space. I have T5 fluorescent grow lamps that I have recessed under shelving in my kitchen that I use for grow lamps. When you go into some of my closets, I have retrofitted some closets with some like large scale CFL bulbs. So they don't quite get as hot as like a big HID lamp that might go out in a grow tent, but it still provides more, you know, utilitarian high intensity light for things. So I pretty much run the gamut. I have used, tested, tried, grown with just about every grow lamp out there. So, and it changes. I move things around and I start new projects. So on any given day, you might see me using a different setup.
You said so many different letters when talking to these things. Sure. We'll save this for the second part of the episode to kind of break down all the different ones, because I feel like just as plant parents, we know we're going to probably use like broad spectrum LED lights,
probably,
right?
Yes.
But I want to go into all of those different letters and things that you are mentioning. But basically, you've got a lot. Well, it's cool too, because I feel like the struggle with houseplant people is that we need, because we're only living in our apartments, like we need lights that are functional but also beautiful. And it's nice that you have the garage where you can have your just like super high function stuff, and then also your personal space where you get to kind of have both. So you have the best of both worlds.
I do. But I am a professional and I've been doing this for almost 30 years. So, you know, granted, I've been working on this a lot longer. So it's not that you can't work towards that, but you have to work with the space you have. And,
exactly.
And there are some options, and we can get into that when we get into the next part of the episode, because I do have some alternative options for you for your living space. So we can talk about that even beyond LEDs. There's some other things.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. If you're listening, this episode is to try and help you educate by your first light. Not your billionth like Leslie has. So don't be intimidated.
And I do, in my book, Gardening Under Lights, you know, there are pictures and explanations of everything and lots of pictures of different lights and plants. All of that's from my house. So you can dig into that there.
Oh my gosh. And it's so good. I can't recommend that book. Actually, I've seen a lot of listeners buy it from our first series of episodes together, and it's
that
so
makes
helpful.
Me happy.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just talk about what is a grow light doing and what is photosynthesis?
Sure. So to really get basic about photosynthesis, plants have little engines in their cells, in their leaves, that contain a substance called chlorophyll. And that's the thing that makes leaves look green. And in order to produce energy for the plant, those cells that contain chlorophyll need to absorb photons of light. That is the energy source that they use to drive all the functions within a plant. So that's kind of input number one, right? And then that light that is absorbed and energy that is generated through photosynthesis is what drives the usage of everything else, be it water, nutrients, right? So light in photosynthesis is not about brightness. And I think that that is sort of the fundamental confusion that most people have in understanding light and plants and grow lights and plants, is that it is not about brightness. It is about volume. So I think the analogy I gave you before in our natural light episodes was to think about light and photosynthesis in terms of raindrops falling on the plant leaf, if you will. Mm-hmm. And each raindrop is a photon of light. And if you have a really big, dense cloud raining over a small area, that density of raindrops of light photons is going to be very dense. The volume is going to be higher, right? That's going to equal a more intense light level. Not brightness, but volume of light. If you have thin, sparse clouds that are misting, you know, a few drips of water drops or light photons, obviously that density is going to be much less and the volume of light is going to be much less. So the rate of photosynthesis increases or decreases depending on how many photons of light that leaf can absorb within a 24-hour period of time.
So our like normal lights in our apartment, which we perceive as bright, can be very bright. So they're bright, but they're not necessarily giving the raindrops, like all of the raindrops that a plant needs.
So if we think about photons of light, it depends. It depends on that lamp, what type of lamp it is, how much energy it pulls, how efficient it is in converting energy, you know, electricity into either heat or light, right? And that determines the volume output of that lamp. But brightness is purely, so when we talk about lumens, and we'll get into that, that's a factor of brightness to the human eye. It's actually not relevant to plants at all. So when you see lumens output on a lamp, that actually means nothing to photosynthesis. It has zero relevancy. What that means is how bright does that look to you as a human being with your eyeball? And we use those brightness ratings to determine, you know, what kind of lights you're going to put in your kitchen or your bathroom. You know, how bright do you want it to be? Mm-hmm. And if you kind of remember back to our previous conversation, and it's okay if you don't remember, which color spectrum of light does the human eye perceive to be brightest?
Oh, I do remember this because it's green, right? Because the irony of the leaves being green.
Right, so it's green light. And while green light is used by plants in photosynthesis and functionality, it's one of the least efficient colors of driving photosynthesis.
Oh, say there's in my living room, we have normal lights that don't put off, you know, the part that the plants need. They could just be putting off a lot of that green light that I'm perceiving is, so the levels of the different colors of light are off, which is going to make the plant not be able to use the light.
Well, a full spectrum grow lamp that emits what you perceive to be a white colored light is generally going to contain all color spectrums of light within the PAR spectrum. So let's talk about PAR. Let's define that really quick since we're talking about colors. So photosynthetically active radiation, PAR, that is the output of spectrum of light balance that that light is putting out. Some lights may put out more red light. Some lamps might put out more green light. It's sort of like a recipe mixture. You know, you can have more of one color than the other, but generally a white colored light is going to have all the colors within it. So any full spectrum lamp that's emitting light, that light can be used by your plants. It just may not be a lot of light volume, and it may be a spectrum mix of light that isn't as good for that particular plant, or it might be fine for that particular plant. So it's not that the general lamps in your home aren't going to provide light for your plants. They are, but it might not be enough. Generally, it's not enough. And some of those lamps are very inefficient and they generate a lot of heat at the same time. You know, that's why there are grow lamps that are specifically calibrated with certain spectrums of light to drive photosynthesis, right? So that's always the goal. To grow a healthy plant, you need to be most efficiently driving photosynthesis. So that's why you see all of these grow lamps that say, oh, we have the best spectrum of light to grow your plants. You know, usually you're going to have more red and blue light mixed into those spectrums, because red and blue light are what?
They're what make the plants flower, right?
They're actually the most efficient drivers of photosynthesis. And that's why you that's why you see all those dual band LED grow lights out there that emit pink or purple light. They're only emitting blue and red light together to be most efficient, right? To deliver the most efficient light. But of course, you don't really want that in your living room. Right?
No.
Right. So we usually will use a full spectrum light. So a basic understanding that brightness does not equate to efficiency when it comes to photosynthesis. It might look bright to you, but that lamp might not actually be putting out enough volume of PAR for the type of plant you want to grow.
Okay, so before we move on to the colors, so photosynthesis, the chlorophyll cells in a plant's leaf make the food for the plant, and they need light and water to do that, right?
They need light to do that. That light drives the uptake and usage of all the other inputs like water and nutrients, right? So if temperatures are warmer and there's a lot of light, the plant may photosynthesize faster and the rate of transpiration increases. It's going to pull water into the plant faster. It's going to lose water more quickly through the leaves, through evaporation, right? As you go into a lower light situation, that's going to slow down. And that's why you have a lot of problems with say succulents, who are plants that generally need a high light situation. You put them in a low light situation and you water them the same amount as if you watered them in a high light situation. What happens?
Oh, they're going to rot immediately.
They go to mush. Because
Right.
Because their rate of photosynthesis and light volume absorption can't actually keep up with that volume of water. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. So that is something that's important, I think, for people to understand with natural light as well. But your watering is going to also depend slightly on how much light you're putting your plant in. And if you do have low light environments, and we're actually going to talk about this on a separate episode with your friend Lisa, the houseplant guru, but when you're in a low light scenario, you do have to be monitoring your watering more than if your plants are in a sunny windowsill where you can kind of trust that they're going to dry out.
Right.
Not only because of the sun and the heat and the evaporation, but because they're actually photosynthesizing more.
Yeah. So that rate of transpiration in relation to photosynthesis slows down. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you step out into a sunny spot on concrete. What happens to you? You start sweating faster, right? You know, your heart rate might go up and then you get back into the shade and everything kind of slows down again. It's kind of the same way, you know, to get really basic about it for plants. So it's not only about the species of plant that you're growing, but it's about the environmental conditions it's in and how much light volume it's getting. And that's going to impact all your other care regimen, your watering specifically. Yes.
Totally.
Yeah. And how much fertilizer and all of that that you use.
So let's break down. I'd love for you to talk a little bit more just about the different spectrums and color of light. So one of my Patreon plant friends, Nettie Porter, writes, I asked my Patreon people what they wanted to hear from you. And she said, it's just so hard to grasp grow lights, lumens, and all the other grow light lingo. All of it sunk in for me this far that it needs to be full spectrum, but it seems that there are different strengths and different colors that get confusing. And I completely agree just with how many different colors and how much there is to understand. So can you break down the different colors and, you know, some colors make them flower and some colors make them grow foliage and all of that. So I'd love help there.
Yeah, sure. Well, luckily in Gardening Under Lights, I teach you everything about
that. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
And so once again, everyone buy this book.
So helpful. If you're interested in that topic, I mean, I don't want you to be confused about it anymore. And that's exactly why I wrote this book. So get Gardening Under Lights. I'm just going to like pitch myself right there.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, so when you think of the rainbow, right, those are the different spectrums of color of visible light. And generally, PAR, photosynthetically active radiation, radiation that stimulates photosynthesis, because things like infrared or UV that are on the high and low ends of the spectrum don't drive photosynthesis. They may do other things in the plant, but what you're focused on is photosynthesis. And so you can see when you use a prism, right, those individual color spectrums of light, but once they're blended all together, it looks white. All the colors together essentially make white colored light. And we call that full spectrum. All of the colors, red, yellow, orange, green, blue, violet, within the PAR visible spectrum, 400 nanometers to about 700 nanometers that the plant can use, all help do something in the plant and all help drive photosynthesis. The two colors that are most efficient that you can get away with only using those two colors are red and blue. And that's where you get that pink purple colored light. So that's going to most efficiently drive photosynthesis. However, there are things that other colors of light do. Green light, for example, you know, the standard line has always been green light doesn't drive photosynthesis and it doesn't do anything in the plant. Well, that's not totally true. And they're looking at things that other colors of light do. And green light, for example, can have an impact on, say, the stoma, the little pores in the leaves opening and closing. There's all sorts of things that all these different colors of light do that are very interesting. And when you mix them in different weights, so say I'm going to throw an acronym out there, but we'll talk about it later. Say I throw an HPS lamp that's got a 3300 Kelvin rating, and that K denotes Kelvin, which is the color temperature of the light. That means it's going to have more red, yellow, orange light in it. It's a warmer colored light. If I buy a T5 or an LED with a 6400 K Kelvin color spectrum measurement, that means there's more blue light. It's a cooler light. So you go from that 400 nanometer to 700 nanometer spectrum of PAR, the colors of light in the photosynthetically active radiation spectrum that the plants can use to give you warmer colored light or cooler colored light. So generally speaking, vegetative growth, leaves, stems, shoots, are going to be driven more by cooler colored, more blue light. Okay. So if you talk about cannabis as a great crop to relate it to, because, you know, it's got a very distinct vegetative phase and a flowering phase, and kind of the old school way of growing it is to grow your, and the same goes for many other ornamental plants in the industry, that we grow vegetatively first, that we want to bulk up with lots of leaves first. We grow under a cooler, bluer colored light. Once we're ready to encourage that plant to flower, we switch it to a warmer color light. We add more red light into that spectrum mix because red light will stimulate flowering and fruiting. So not only do the different colors of light differently impact photosynthesis and the rates of photosynthesis, but they also impact other developmental responses like growing more leaves versus flowering or shoot and stem elongation, right? So plants grown under blue or cooler light will tend to stay a little bit more compact with less internode elongation. Switch it under to red light and that plant's going to start to stretch more between the leaf nodes. And I think I've actually got some pictures of exactly that scenario in my book of some beans that I grew under a cooler spectrum CMH lamp and a warmer spectrum HPS lamp. And you can see that the one I grew under bluer light is really short and dense, and the one I grew under red light is really elongated. So there are all sorts of different physiological things. So if you're growing lettuce on your countertop, you don't need a warm colored light. You want a cool colored light in the 64K spectrum range, Kelvin range.
Okay.
Right. If you cool. are trying to.
What can we remember? Let's make an like, okay. So vegetative state is for cool.
Yes.
Because vegetables are cool to eat because it's good for your body.
Sure.
And then
sure.
flowering is warm because
they make your
flowers.
Plants look hot.
They make your plants look hot and sexy. Okay. So we're never going to forget that ever again. Because I was – so anyway. And also – okay, cool. Nailed it. I got to make some sort of okay. like Instagram poster for that.
Okay.
Okay. So the warm versus cool is depending on the PAR, you were saying, or
correct.
Depending on the Kelvin. Sorry.
The PAR output that that lamp delivers and the metric that you use to know what that is – given to you in Kelvin. So when you see a grow lamp that has a Kelvin metric of, say, 3,500, that's a warm colored light with a lot more red light in it. Okay.
Okay.
It's still full spectrum. You're going to get all the colors of light within that grow lamp, but it's got more red in it than it does anything else. When you buy a grow lamp that is labeled as 6,400K, that's going to have a lot more blue light in it. So to just keep it really basic, if you're growing something in its vegetative state or you're growing leafy greens or you're growing foliage plants, you want cooler, more blue light. So
and that's up to what number K?
6,400. 5,500 to 7,000K.
Okay.
If you are wanting to get more blooms on your tomato plants or your citrus plants, you know, they're ready to flower, or your orchids, you might use a grow lamp that's got a warmer spectrum. So anywhere between that 3,300 to, you know, up to 5,000 Kelvin.
Got it. Okay, cool. So K, when you see that K, that's
yes.
what you're thinking warm versus cool.
Yeah,
and now with
color,
our little
right. It's the color temperature. It's not technically a temperature, but it is the sort of what visual temperature, cool or warm, of the spectrum output of that lamp.
So the sun has full spectrum
everything.
Light. So now I'm like, okay, well, how does this information affect me as a
sure.
houseplant parent?
Sure.
Because I'm not like growing, you know, cannabis or whatever. So it makes sense that if we want to replicate the sun, we want that full spectrum light, right? So why are these... are these other like pink lights and purple lights on the market just for specific growers, or it's easier to make them? Like, why are they so popular? Like, why do we still see them?
Because it's the most efficient. So when you talk okay. about energy efficient grow lamps, mm-hmm. everybody sort of makes the mistake in thinking, oh, if that lamp is low wattage, that means it's efficient. Nope. That actually has nothing to do with it. So when we're talking about efficiency in relation to grow lamps, we are talking about how efficient is that lamp at generating photosynthesis based on how much energy it uses. Okay. And I actually do all of this math for you in the book. So if you really want
yes.
to figure this out, I've got some calculator boxes in there for you to do it.
Yes.
So based on how much electricity. So just because an LED, it only uses 3 watts. Well, that doesn't make it efficient. And it also is going to very much limit the output capacity of that lamp, right?
Mm-hmm.
So say a 3 watt, you know, little LED lamp probably pulls more realistically close to 2 watts once you figure in some of that loss as you input it into the lamp. And then it takes that 2 watts of electricity and it converts it into two things, heat or PAR. Right. And what can make LEDs more efficient is that they have the ability to convert more of that electricity into usable PAR versus heat. So you always hear, well, LEDs put off less heat. That's what grow lamps are doing. They're making two things. They're making either heat or PAR. And the more PAR that that lamp can make from the electricity pulls, that's what makes it efficient. But how much electricity it can pull in is also determines how much output, how many volumes of the, how many photons that it can put out. So there's a direct correlation there. So essentially when someone is making a dual band LED that only mm-hmm. produces two bands of light, two spectrums, red and blue, what it's doing is giving you the most efficiently achieved photosynthesis. So what growers who grow in controlled environments, right? You see all those shipping mm-hmm. containers full of lettuce
yes.
and all the light in there is pink or purple.
Mm-hmm.
If they can grow most efficiently and fast with only using those two spectrums of light, and most of that energy from that lamp is converted to PAR, why would they use a full spectrum light?
Got it. Mixed in
spectrums of light that are less efficient at generating photosynthesis, if they can get away with using just red and blue light that is the most efficient at driving photosynthesis.
Yeah, I just toured a couple months ago. I toured an indoor cannabis growing facility, and we had episodes air this month on it. And the entire grow house was kind of orangey pink, but it's because the cannabis was all in flower.
Exactly. So if you had been there during the vegetative, phase of that growth, it would have looked more blue.
Cooler.
Right.
Interesting. Friends, today's episode is supported by Espoma Organics. Espoma Organics is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. I started introducing Espoma Organics products to my plants in my household when I wanted to upgrade and be more intentional with what I was bringing home and actually planting my plants in and how I was taking care of my plants. Because I actually didn't even know I had to fertilize plants for my first 6 months. So Espoma Organics Easy Dose Liquid Concentrates for their fertilizers and plant foods make fertilizing foolproof. If you are nervous about fertilizing, it is so easy. You flip, fill, and fertilize. And their potting mixes are filled with performance-boosting ingredients that help our plants grow big and beautiful and keep them healthy and happy. I love all of their different soils. They have a great cactus soil. They have a great general-use potting mix. And they also sell bags of perlite if you like to be a mad scientist and make your own airy mixtures. And Billy and I use their horticultural sprays whenever we have a pest outbreak. They also have amazing outdoor products for you outdoor gardeners, like their Plant Tone, which is an all-natural, all-purpose plant food and long-lasting fertilizer for flowers, veggies, trees, and shrubs that you can put outdoors. So to learn more about their over 70 organic indoor and outdoor plant products for us plant people, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or click the link below to the Bloom and Grow Espoma Amazon storefront to order online. Once again, check out Espoma.com to check out your local Espoma dealers and learn more about this awesome company, or click the link below to the Amazon storefront to order online. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Okay, back to our conversation. This is all making sense. So what about the different types of grow lamps, and what is the most important thing that we should look for as we're trying to purchase a grow lamp, K versus PAR versus lumens. Obviously, lumen isn't the answer, but what should we be looking for? Because I feel like on the box, sometimes reading the box gets confusing. And then maybe, I don't know if that translates to the different types of grow lamps you're going to tell us about, but yeah, like let's start talking about those things.
Well, it is all confusing. And I will say that labeling is not consistent, okay, across. Mm-hmm. And you've got a lot of cheap grow lamps coming in from like China, and a lot of the labeling is actually incorrect. And so it can be very misleading and confusing. You get what you pay for. And I usually just recommend to people that, you know, quality is important in a grow lamp because you actually want it to last. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the cheaper LEDs that I've purchased kind of burn out really quickly. I know that the grow lamps can be pricey, and I know that that's off-putting for a lot of people, but I'm also going to tell you that you might buy a cheap one many times over. So quality is important. I usually look for U.S. manufacturing. There are a lot of really great U.S. manufacturing grow lamp companies, and I would encourage you to buy U.S. made if you can, because I find the quality and labeling is becoming significantly improved. So that's just my personal preference. Do what you want, you know, but that's just my own recommendation. The next thing that you want to look for is, you know, you have to kind of look at, are you growing a small cluster of a few houseplants? Are you trying to provide all the light that plant is going to get because it's not near any windows? Or are you supplementing low light you already have from windows? Because if you're growing houseplants in a window, but it's just not quite enough light to make them happy and you need to supplement it, you know, you don't need a 300 watt HID grow lamp, right? That's going to put out a lot of light and a lot more heat than you want in your space. So you might only need a single spotlight 30 to 40 watt LED to put out enough volume of light for you in that space. And that would be sort of something similar to that Soltec aspect light, right? I think that's about 40 watts, 30 watts. I can't remember off the top of my head. It's in that range. And that puts off enough light for you to get, you know, 2 to 3 square feet of coverage over a group of houseplants that you have in your space near a window. It's perfect for that, or a citrus tree or a large houseplant. So, you know, generally most people are going to need grow lamps that fall into that sort of, you know, 15 to 40 watt range when you're supplementing light for some houseplants. So you're kind of looking at, you know, how much light am I trying to generate over how many types of plants? If you're trying to provide all the light that plant is going to get, like in a basement or a garage or a grow tent or a closet, well, that changes everything. Now you actually have to step up to a much higher volume of light. That's when you're going to start getting into the 250 watt to 600 watt grow lamps. So it's kind of like size. How much energy is that lamp pulling and going to output for you based on what you're trying to grow? So you can really overkill your grow light needs, but a lot of people kind of undershoot their needs too. And it really depends on how much natural light the space is getting. So number one, I would encourage you to go back and listen to our natural light episodes to help you gauge your baseline starting, how much natural light you have in your space. And then you might find that you only need one or two, you know, T5 fluorescents or smaller LEDs to supplement the volume of light they're getting every day. So that's kind of the first place to start.
Yeah, I feel like the majority of the listeners listening probably have a lot of plants. They've probably acquired a lot of plants in the last few months in their plant parenthood, and maybe are looking to supplement existing light that they have or move some plants like the way I needed to into my kitchen, which has zero light because it's 20 feet from a window, and needed supplemental light. Mm-hmm. So what would you recommend for no one's, you know, growing intense stuff in a basement, but like, yeah, like what type of, I guess, light would you recommend for that?
Most of your listeners are going to be using grow lamps that fall into the fluorescent, whether they be a T5 fluorescent tube or a CFL, a compact fluorescent, okay? Those are very cost-effective and efficient options. Okay.
Now the T5s are like the long tubes that like are in my school classroom, right?
The ones or that aren't are probably in your office. The ones that are probably in your office are probably T8s or T12s. They're bigger tubes. Okay. So the T5s are the smallest ones. They're about the diameter of a penny. You know, they're the small, and they're actually the most efficient of all of the fluorescent tubes. And there's lots of great ones. I like the Sun Blasters, and they actually make those with cool little reflecting hoods that just go over a single tube. And I actually use those as recessed lighting. You can mount them under counters, which are great if you've got a kitchen. And so those are perfect for that. You can put them into bookshelves. You can put them into cabinets, you know, whatever you want. They're great for that. Or you can pop those into the T5, you know, hoods, you know, that you might hang over a bigger group of plants. So T5 fluorescents are still a very efficient and effective lower cost entry point for anybody growing foliage plants, African violets, a lot of basic houseplants. They're great. I still use them, even though I use lots of other types of grow lights. CFLs are those little curly spirally fluorescents that you can basically screw into any standard.
They're more like a light bulb.
Home fixture. So you can use them in clusters. You can, what's really great about those is if you want to hang a group of really nice decorative hanging lamps and use those CFLs in them over a group of plants, they're perfect for that. So you don't have to get super fancy. You can use, and with the T5 fluorescents, there's a lot of advancements in those as well. So you can get all different color spectrums of lights. So I have some blue ones, I have some red ones, and you can mix them up or you can change them out. So there's still a lot of flexibility with fluorescents. So I would encourage you that if, you know, the LEDs are a little bit out of your price range, you can do a lot of great growing with T5s and CFLs, number one. So that's
The option to, if you just have some sort of light fixture, the option to just screw in a CFL or an LED, but just buy the bulb and screw the bulb into something that you already have, that's a great option that isn't like, you know, an insane DIY project that you and I love to do.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of our community likes to do too, but it's nice to have both options.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you're growing seeds or you're doing anything like that, the T5 fluorescents are great for that. Or you're doing, you know, propagation, they're great for that. And then beyond that, you're going to step into LEDs, of which now there are a dizzying array of LEDs, and they're getting better and better and better as plant grow lamps. They did not start out being great, efficient options for plant growth, but they are obviously now there's so much research and innovation going into that they get better and better. You are still paying for a lot of that innovation, and that's why the LED grow lamps are more expensive. I'm going to tell you this, and I say it in my book, we'll eventually get there. It doesn't necessarily mean that that LED puts off more PAR than that T5 fluorescent, or that it's more efficient for photosynthesis, but it can be longer lasting and put off less heat overall. And the goal is that long-term, they're more energy efficient. So you are still paying for some of that innovation, but there are some really cool options out there. Say you have a fluorescent fixture, or you have put, you know, fixtures under your counters or whatever, where you were using T5 fluorescents. You can now pop in retrofit LED bars into those fluorescent fixtures. So there's some really cool retrofit LED bars that you can switch to if you were using fluorescents. And those are, again, great for, they come in full spectrum whites, or you can get them in dual band mixed colors. They're very cool. They are more expensive than T5 tubes, but they're very versatile and easy to use. And then, of course, you get into the little Spotlight E26, E27 base LEDs, like you said, that you can, just like the CFL, screw into an existing light fixture or a reading lamp or whatever you have.
I saw Summer Rain Oaks just did one of her YouTube videos where she did like a home makeover for someone. And yeah, she just like, I think General Electric or some company has put out a grow lamp, and she just like screwed the bulb into like an existing lamp. And I was like, maybe I should just do that with all of my light bulbs, like just so I can have this nice kind of light pouring out all over my apartment.
Right. There have been a number of those on the market. I know the GE is a new one. A lot of them are very similar. You know, again, you need to look at the wattages and see how much volume that they're going to put out and, you know, what the spectrum is. And I think they've got cool and warm spectrum option. Or I think the one that I looked at for them might have just been cool spectrum. I can't remember. But yeah, so you need to look at that too. So on any of the LEDs with an E26 or E27 base, base, meaning you can just screw those into your lamp fixture. But again, those are spotlights. You're not going to maintain a big group of plants for those, or a large, you know, that big fiddly fig you have, it's probably going to need several of those to do the job. So it's a matter of scale, right? In terms of what's the footprint of light and how close is it to the plant as to how much volume it's going to give it. But there's lots of great LEDs out there. And certainly, you know, you can get really tiny and simple with the LEDs that you use, and you can get super intense with LEDs. Once you move past sort of these entry points of T5's fluorescence, CFL fluorescence, and the lower wattage LEDs, right? That's most of what your listener base is going to use. And there's lots of great options across the spectrum for those types of lamps.
So fluorescent and LEDs.
Yes.
So we won't even go into, I just had written down HPS. So that's what you have in your base.
Once you get, once you get beyond those basics that I described, you get into what is called HID grow lighting, high intensity discharge. That is going to be a much higher volume intensity of light. And those are the types of light that I use in my grow tents and in my garage. There are starting to be some in-between LED options, like 90 to 100 watt sort of bigger spotlights that are great for big, you know, big plants or bigger groups of plants. So I think we're going to start to see more kind of in-between options in LEDs coming out, which is really cool. But HID lighting is going to encompass things like high-pressure sodium lamps, metal halide lamps, ceramic metal halide lamps, plasma lighting, and then the big high intensity LED rigs, okay, which are really expensive.
If people are interested in learning more about that, write me and maybe we'll have Leslie come back on for garage growing with Leslie.
Yeah, we can get into of the intense grow
lighting and
contrast, because, you know, there's so much focus on LEDs, but the reality is that there are advancements being made in all of these other lighting categories too. And so there are many people out there that will still argue today that the new, you know, HPSs or dual end HPSs or CMHs are more efficient than the LEDs on the market right now still. So, you know, there are different camps there, but I would certainly be happy to dive into that deeper end of the pool with you on another episode.
I mean, it's exciting that it is an ongoing conversation. And, you know, every time we talk, there's probably going to be a new advancement there. Like, that is a very exciting thing. And even I was having dinner with the people from ModSprout, who I love. I have their lights installed all over my apartment. And they were like, yeah, we just did all this research and blew out and like doubled the output of like whatever your, the bar that I have in my bookshelf. Right. Like they've already like doubled the amount of PAR. PAR that their new lamp has. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Also give it to me.
Right. And that's, I think I say in my book, I joke that, you know, lighting technology is moving at the speed of light and there are going to be changes. However, in Gardening Under Lights, what I do is I give you the basic science. The basic science is not changing. Okay. The fundamentals of light physics are what they are. Right. And if you understand those, then you will be able to keep up and understand all of the new lighting that comes out as it emerges and as new technology is available, you know, learning how to use it and how to pick the right things and how to do a little bit of the math, you know, to figure out what is real and what isn't is all there. So even though the mechanics may change, you know, and efficiency is getting better and new lighting options are there, if you understand some just basic 101 light science, you're going to get it.
Totally. So I have some questions from Patreon supporters, listeners, and also myself that I'd love to ask you. So number one, Patreon supporter Mia G, and I'm wondering if your name is Maria and Mia is your nickname, will under-counter LED lights work? So your basic, like if you have a kitchen that kind of has that recessed lighting, she wants to know if that will probably work if it's an LED or if you have to buy a like actual LED grow light.
So if they're existing under the counter LEDs that are there, it's a white light full spectrum. And I don't know how much other natural light is in the kitchen, but usually once you go into a under a counter, you lose a lot of natural light volume, right? It's always darker under the counter, which is why they put lights there. That's going to be a low light volume situation generally, right? Those types of lights under the counter, if they're already there, if they were already installed, usually aren't super bright, right? They're there to just make sure you can see what's there. So you're really looking at low light plants. So you can sustain some plants there if those lights are on all day.
Okay, right, because it's also about the length of time the lights are on.
It's about accumulating a number of photons hitting those leaves to generate photosynthesis mm-hmm. within a 24-hour period. So again, it's not just the brightness or how much light that puts out at that second. It's about how much it puts out all day long and how much that plant can accumulate. So the less output of the grow lamp, the longer you have to leave it on, depending on what you're growing, in order to accumulate a certain number of photons a day. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So those are probably low output. And so, you know, low light plants, I probably wouldn't promise you that you could sustain high light succulents there, but you could probably get away with your pothos or your heartleaf philodendron, that sort of thing.
Got it. Yeah. I was thinking about that with my bathroom because I don't have a window in my bathroom, but I want plants and it's so bad. And so I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll swap out my, you know, normal bathroom lights with some of these new LED bulbs. But then I realized, well, am I going to leave my bathroom light on all day, every day in order for the plants to get that? And I decided not to.
Right. But we talked about that and I said, well, you know, just turning on and off every time you go in there, isn't going to be enough.
Right.
You know, unless you drink a lot of coffee. Okay.
But, exactly. A lot of coffee.
Right. If you drink a lot of coffee, a lot of mushroom.
8 hours
coffee.
A day.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you really would have to leave it on. You know, the great thing about some of the lower wattage LEDs is that they are efficient and they're not using a ton of electricity. So if you're not trying to sustain a jungle in there and you have a nice shelf of plants, you could install, you know, a grow bar, a T5 fluorescent, mm-hmm. an LED bar, you know, any of the efficient grow lights that are out there and do that. But yeah, you would have to put it on a timer and leave it on probably 12 hours a day.
The timers are such a game changer because we have all of our 5 grow lights now in our apartment and they're all on timers. We don't think twice about them. Like, I feel like the timers are the only reason that they work because I don't think I would be able to remember to turn them on and off every day.
I have timers on every single grow light in my house. And okay, you want to really know how geeky this gets in my house?
Always.
Well, of course, the garage garden is on its own circuit, but I actually have a separate internet wireless designation for my grow lamps and I have them on wireless timers that I can monitor.
Oh my
gosh. If I'm away, I can actually turn them on and off or see if they've tripped or whatever.
That's brilliant.
It's ridiculous.
And also, plant friends, Leslie is going to send me all of these recommendations that she's giving me in terms of lights. I'm going to make an Amazon storefront or a resource page in the show notes. So make sure you check the show notes for the Amazon link. But my question to you, Leslie, is do you actually have suggested timers as well that you buy separately or you buy only lights that have the timers built in?
No, the timers are all separate. Every timer that I have is separate. So most of the time you're not going to find, most grow lamps don't have a built-in timer, most of them. So you're generally looking, and there's all different kinds. I mean, you can use the really basic ones that you use to flip on and off your regular household lamps. They work perfectly fine. When you get into higher wattage grow lamps, you actually have to upgrade your timer. Because remember, you're passing that electricity through the timer to the lamp. And so basic timers may not be able to handle the watt load on that lamp once you start getting up to a higher wattage. So that's something to think about too. So you can get really fancy with digital timers and remote control, or you can use really basic household timers for the low wattage T5s and LEDs.
Okay, cool. So we'll put some links in that. I'm going to source the listeners too. So that'll be a great resource for the community. So here's a question that's a pain point for me because I definitely did it wrong when I started out with grow lights. How close do the plants need to be to the grow light once you have it installed?
Right. That is going to vary completely based on the output of that grow lamp.
Right.
What type of grow lamp it is, what type of plant you're growing. So very, very generally speaking, remember, we're thinking about volume of light photons dropping on the surface of that leaf. What happens the farther away you pull that grow lamp from a plant? More of those light photons
get lost.
They get lost, right? So you lose you get a lower volume of light photons hitting the surface of your leaf from the grow lamp itself, the farther away you get. So the closer you put the grow lamp, the more full sun, you know, bright, intense light condition that you're getting, the farther away you pull the grow lamp, the lower light that you get. So it's actually kind of a useful strategy that you can use the same grow lamp for different types of plants. Yes. Right? But you put the low light plants farther away from the grow lamp and you put the high light plants closer to the grow lamp. Now, most grow lamps are still going to emit some heat, and even a fluorescent or LED will burn the foliage of a plant if it gets too close. So you want to be too close. But I actually have a table in my book on page 84 that kind of gives you, uses HPS lamps as an example, but I give you, you know, how far to put it away. And so again, if it's a full sun plant that likes intense light, I'll use Soltec aspect light as an example. So if you put that 12 inches above your plant, you're kind of replicating a full sun scenario on one plant. Mm-hmm. If you pull it up to 18 inches, you're getting kind of medium light. If you pull it up to 24 inches, you're getting sort of a lower light, shadier light supplemental situation. So you can kind of think the closer it is full sun, the farther away it's shady. So it depends on the lamp. Now, if you have a 600 watt HPS lamp or a 15 watt LED, my recommendation of distance is going to be very different. Yes.
Right.
If you put a 600 watt HPS lamp 6 inches from a tomato plant, you will fry it.
Right.
Okay. If you put a 15 watt LED 6 inches from your tomato plant's going to laugh at you. There's like, totally. Really, this is like, you know, I'm going to die in the shade here. know, right. So it is about the volume output capacity of that grow lamp coupled with how much natural light you have in your space, coupled with the species of plants you're growing. So there is not a one size fit all easy recommendation for that. And that's why I had to write a book about it.
I would just certainly, just from my experience, everyone listening, once you install the grow light, pay attention to those plants under the light for those first 6 months. Because when I installed the Mod Sprout grow bar in my bookshelf, it didn't equate to me that my bookshelf is like 15 inches tall. And I put like little pots of like little succulents like 15 inches away from the light, and a small pilea, and they all stretched. Yes. And I realized that I had to get creative and kind of do different heights of the plants to the grow light. So it was a great lesson. But if you listeners can save your etiolated plants, do so. And with the using props, I now have the same setup in two corners of my house. It's a Soltec light and then an IKEA plant stand that has three levels. I have my citrus are like my highest. And then as the levels descend, I have more and more plants. And then I even have like my snake plants and super low light plants on the floor.
Right. Ferns on the floor, citrus
exactly.
up top.
Citrus up top. But it's a great way to utilize all the space that, you know, that grow light, like you said, that 2 to 3 square inch section of the room that grow light is affecting. Getting crafty and playing with levels is super helpful there.
Right. And also understanding that, you know, if you're hanging that grow light in a room that has a fair amount of natural ambient light, you could probably run that light a lot less. If you go back into your kitchen where we decided, you know, using our measurements that you had a baseline, like the bare minimum for the lowest light plants in your kitchen, you're probably going to have to run your grow lamp longer in your kitchen.
Do you have any other like troubleshooting suggestions for people that are new to grow lights?
Well, I think if you've already gone out and bought a light and you're growing and you're struggling, like you said, pay attention to the plant. If it's stretching, it's not getting enough light. If it looks like it's burning, the light is too intense for that plant. You can move the light or reduce the number of hours. I think that's the other sort of thing that is confusing to people is that time is a factor. And how long you leave on the light is just as important to that recipe mix as the light output, the spectrum, all of that. And it's not the same. And so understanding how long you might need to leave that light on, because the whole goal is that we're not wasting energy. We want to be efficient. And if you don't need to leave the grow light on for 12 hours, don't leave the grow light on for 12 hours. You might only need to leave it on for 3 or 4 hours to supplement. And I think that's the important thing, that you're supplementing light, because there is ambient light in your space. it's probably not enough for a lot of your plants unless you're blessed with tons of southern facing windows. And if so, I'm horribly jealous of you.
Jealous, yeah.
Totally jealous. And you can grow a lot of plants in that environment, but it's about volume and intensity and duration. So understanding that time also plays a really important factor. And, you know, there's so many other topics that we could get into, like photo period and all of that, you know, related to time mm-hmm. and light. But basically the trick is getting the amount of light you need for the time you need, but not more than that for the type of plant that you're going to grow. You know, lumens, I think a lot of people ask me about lumens and we didn't get too deep into that. Obviously, the numbers I want you to focus on if you get into my book are PPF and PPFD. Those are the actual measurements of the PAR coming out of your lamp at certain distances. Lumens, again, is just a visual brightness and it doesn't mean anything to the plants, but I do give you some squishy math conversion tables in my book. So if you want to do some estimates of, you know, what kind of PPFD you might get from a grow lamp if you only have lumens, I do give you some mathematical conversions in my books that will give you an estimate.
Yeah, if this episode has made you curious or made you excited, Leslie's book is like this conversation, but on super strength fertilizer. There's all the math that you could ever want, but broken down really simply. And all the tables are so helpful and you cover everything in there. So yeah, where can we find your book?
Yeah, you can find it on Amazon, of course, Barnes & Noble, you know, Barnes & Noble online. I directly sell signed copies if you want to get a signed copy from me at lesliehalleck.com. Check your local bookstore. Hopefully you'll see it on the shelf right along with Plant Parenting, my new book.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Plant Parenting, Propagation. And where can we find you, lesliehalleck.com? Yep. And you're Leslie Halleck on Instagram too, right?
Yeah, at Leslie Halleck on Instagram and Twitter. I have two Facebook groups. You can find me on Facebook at Halleck Horticultural. And my Facebook groups are Gardening Under Lights and Plant Parenting. So you can join both or one or the other if you're interested. And that's kind of where I try to have more of the Q&A conversations. But I post tons of pictures on Instagram and occasionally on Twitter as well. So those are both at Leslie Halleck.
Awesome. So all of the links to find Leslie and links to all of the lights and stuff we talked about today will be in the show notes, plant friends. Leslie, thank you so much. And until our next conversation, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's never enough time. We can go on never all enough. Day. I love it.
Thank you, Leslie, for breaking that down. I can always count on Leslie to take anything super sciencey and super intimidating and break it down in a way that is so understandable. And I love how she never makes me feel stupid. She always makes me feel like I'm learning. I just appreciate her friendship so very much. I just wanted to take a couple minutes because people write me a lot asking about the grow lights that I use in my house. I've been using them for over a year now, maybe a year and a half. So the first grow light that I got was a Soltech Solutions light. You guys all know I love Soltech Solutions. I now have three of them. I've since graduated. I like them so much. But they're a hanging pendant light. They look like any other light you would have in your apartment. They have that pure broad spectrum white light. It's actually museum quality lighting, and it's definitely a luxury grow light. So it's on the more expensive side, but Billy and I have been buying the lights and thinking about them like when we go into our next home, like we're going to bring those lights and use them in the design of our next home. They're super minimal, super sexy, super sleek, and they're amazing. Our citrus trees sit under them. So they have 40 watt and 20 watt lights. They pump out a ton of lumens. They pump out a beautiful broad spectrum that keeps our plants happy. My monsteras have exploded in growth under them with my fiddly fig. Figaro has been growing very happily under them as well. And they're offering 20% off to the Bloom and Grow community at soltechsolutions.com. Use the code BLOOM20. And if you have a green wall or if you need track lighting, they have come out with the first to market track grow light. So if you have an office or a green wall or maybe plants that are like in a hard to reach place that the aspect wouldn't work, you can also now build your own customizable track lighting system, which is kind of amazing. And they're actually next month's sponsor. So you're going to hear more about that later. But in case you want to start buying now, use the code BLOOM20 for 20% off. So those are the lights that I have in two of my dark corners. And then Modern Sprout is an amazing company that they actually started making hydroponic planters, but they have great grow lights. So Modern Sprout has a grow bar, which is like a wooden bar with a strip grow light LED panel in it. And I installed that grow light, it's on my YouTube channel, in my bookshelf and turned a whole shelf of a super low light bookshelf into a little jungle haven. So I have all of my Pilea peperomioides. I have an heirloom jade plant that a friend had given me. I have a little euphorbia. I'm always rotating stuff in and out of my bookshelf. We had a geranium that was constantly blooming that was so lovely to wake up to. So I love the Modern Sprout Grow Bar. We also have their Grow House, which is a really beautiful open terrarium that has a grow light in it. We keep that in our kitchen. They've also come out with this really cool grow frame, which actually looks like a frame that you could like put on a wall and put plants in. Or if you had a desk, I've sent the grow frame to friends before who have desks that I felt like needed greening up. They have unbelievable lighting options that are smaller scale, more countertop scale. But Modern Sprout is an awesome company. They just are led by the most inspiring people, and they just have a really beautiful aesthetic as well. So my big thing is I don't want to bring lights in that don't look beautiful or don't look normal. And Modern Sprout has some really beautiful options for like smaller scale lighting as well. So they have 15% off for our community by using the code BLOOM at checkout. So you could head to modsprout.com to check out their grow light offers. And their grow frame is pretty awesome. And they said that they actually can get succulents to bloom under that light. It's so strong. One more thing about both the Soltec and Mod Sprout lights that are super important to me and Billy is that they're all on timers. They come with timers. So we plugged them in a year and a half ago and set the timer for 12 hours on, 12 hours off, and haven't thought about the light since. So that's the only way that having five grow lights actually works in an apartment, because they're all on timers and I don't ever think about them, which is awesome. And with Soltec, if you had listened to my episode with Alessia from back then, she was at my house doing the interview and the light actually went off. And every night when the Soltec light goes off over Lemony and Limey at 10 p.m., if Billy and I are home sitting on the couch, I always say, good night, Lemony, good night, Limey, because the light turns off. I'm a nerd and I'm weird, plant friends. Another thing is, full disclosure, both of those companies are sponsors of the show, and those codes are part of our sponsor partnership. I approached both of those companies to be my sponsor because they're products that I used before they were sponsors, and I liked their products so much, I thought that they would be helpful to the Bloom and Grow community. And that is something I do with all of our sponsors. I only have sponsors that have products that I use and love. If I can hook you up with a discount, I'm going to, because I know we all love a discount in our planty spending habits. The other thing that I have for you guys, another resource, is Leslie sent me a bunch of lights. A lot of the lights that we talked about in today's show, and a lot of lights that Leslie has tried, also other members of our community that have sent me grow lights that they light, that are available on Amazon, I've put in one of my Amazon storefronts. So you can head to the link below in the show notes. It's bit.ly/growlightep. But it's in the show notes to check out all of the different Amazon grow light offerings that people in our community know and like. And that timer that Leslie and I nerded out about is also in that Amazon storefront. The cool thing about that Amazon storefront and my entire storefront with all of the different shopping carts that I have, so I have a lot of different shopping carts with everything you need for a terrarium based off of the terrarium episode, low light plants based off of the low light plants episode, make your own moss pole, like everything you would need to make your own moss pole. I make these little shopping carts on my Amazon storefront. So Amazon, I'm an Amazon associate, so anything that you guys buy off of that storefront, Bloom and Grow gets a portion of the sale at no extra cost to you. So if you need to buy stuff on Amazon, you might as well go through the storefront to help support Bloom and Grow at no cost to you. It's a really easy way to support the show. So if you are interested in getting grow lights, I hope that these are all great resources for you. Some discounts, some resources, some, you know, all-in-one shopping. I hope that you can go forth and illuminate your lives and your plants and keep your plants happy and healthy and keep your collection growing if you can grow it in a healthy way. And emphasis on healthy way, because I want to make this resource for you to have a go-to resource for if you need to buy a grow light, if you need to learn about grow lights, I want you to learn and I want you to buy responsibly. But most importantly, like, If you don't need one, don't buy it. I want you guys all just to be able to make empowered decisions, and I want you to grow your plant collections and make purchases intentionally and in a healthy way. So I hope this information empowers you to make the right choice for you and your budget and your homes and environment. So not to be preachy, but I just want everyone to be happy and healthy. So thank you again to Leslie for joining me. Her books are also linked in the show notes, Plant Parenting, which is a book all about propagation, and Gardening Under Lights. If you are interested in grow lights and you want to get a little bit more nerdy, that book is a must have. She is so good at breaking down the science of all of that. I'll also link the other Grow Light episode with Chris Satch if you want to hear all of this information through a different lens, through a different voice, so you can just keep absorbing. I know the science can get a little overwhelming, plant friends, because it's overwhelming to me. Thank you again to all of our Patreon supporters. I'm so thankful for you, plant friends. Thanks for helping me continue to bring this show to as many listeners as possible. And thank you to today's episode sponsors, Espoma Organics, the most awesome potting soil, fertilizers, and horticultural sprays I could ever dream of. For indoor and outdoor gardeners, visit espoma.com for more information, or click the link in the show notes with my Amazon storefront for them. And the plantiest Airbnbs available, Planty Houseboats from A Floating Bed and Breakfast. Visit theloiselanehouseboat.com for more information and tell her Maria sent you for 20% off. Whew. Holy moly, plant friends, how much information was that? Until next week, I love you. Keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, plant friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.